Chapter 6, Part 6 of Fox's Book of Martyrs, Volume 1. Fox's Book of Martyrs, Volume 1, by John Fox, edited by William Byron Forbush. Chapter 6, A Narrative of the Piedmontese War, Part 6. A Narrative of the Piedmontese War. The massacres and murders already mentioned to have been committed in the valleys of Piedmont nearly depopulated most of the towns and villages. One place only had not been assaulted, and that was owing to the difficulty of approaching it. This was the little commonalty of Roris, which was situated upon a rock. As the work of blood grew slack in other places, the Earl of Christopel, one of the Duke of Savoy's officers, determined, if possible, to make himself master of it, and with that view detached 300 men to surprise it secretly. The inhabitants of Roris, however, had intelligence of the approach of these troops when Captain Joshua Jonavel, a brave Protestant officer, put himself at the head of a small body of the citizens, and waited in ambush to attack the enemy in a small defile. When the troops appeared and had entered the defile, which was the only place by which the town could be approached, the Protestants kept up a smart and well-directed fire against them, and still kept themselves concealed behind bushes from the sight of the enemy. A great number of the soldiers were killed, and the remainder, receiving a continued fire, and not seeing any to whom they might return it, thought proper to retreat. The members of this little community then sent a memorial to the Marquis of Pionessa, one of the Duke's general officers, setting forth that they were sorry, upon any occasion, to be under the necessity of taking up arms, but that the secret approach of a body of troops, without any reason assigned, or any previous notice sent for the purpose of their coming, had greatly alarmed them. That, as it was their custom never to suffer any of the military to enter their little community, they had repelled force by force, and should do so again. But in all other respects, they professed themselves dutiful, obedient, and loyal subjects to their sovereign, the Duke of Savoy. The Marquis of Pionessa, that he might have the better opportunity of deluding and surprising the Protestants of Roris, sent them word in answer that he was perfectly satisfied with their behavior, for they had done right, and even rendered a service to their country, as the men who had attempted to pass the defile were not his troops, or sent by him, but a band of desperate robbers who had, for some time, infested those parts, and been a terror to the neighboring country. To give a greater color to his treachery, he then published an ambiguous proclamation seemingly favorable to the inhabitants. Yet, the very day after this plausible proclamation and specious conduct, the Marquis sent 500 men to possess themselves of Roris, while the people, as he thought, were lulled into perfect security by his specious behavior. Captain Jonavel, however, was not to be deceived so easily. He therefore laid an ambuscade for this body of troops, as he had for the former, and compelled them to retire with very considerable loss. Though foiled in these two attempts, the Marquis of Pionessa determined on a third, which should be still more formidable. But first, he imprudently published another proclamation, disowning any knowledge of the second attempt. Soon after, 700 chosen men were sent upon the expedition, who, in spite of the fire from the Protestants, forced the defile, entered Roris, and began to murder every person they met with, without distinction of age or sex. The Protestant Captain Jonavel, at the head of a small body, though he had lost the defile, determined to dispute their passage through a fortified pass that led to the richest and best part of the town. Here he was successful by keeping up a continual fire, and by means of his men being all complete marksmen. The Roman Catholic commander was greatly staggered at this opposition, as he imagined that he had surmounted all difficulties. He, however, did his endeavors to force the pass, but being able to bring up only 12 men in front at a time, and the Protestants being secured by a breastwork, he found he should be baffled by the handful of men who opposed him. Enraged at the loss of so many of his troops, and fearful of disgrace if he persisted in attempting what appeared so impracticable, he thought it the wisest thing to retreat. Unwilling, however, to withdraw his men by the defile at which he had entered, on account of the difficulty and danger of the enterprise, he determined to retreat toward Velario, by another pass called Piampra, which, though hard of access, was easy of descent. But in this he met with disappointment, for Captain Jonavel, having posted his little band here, greatly annoyed the troops as they passed, and even pursued their rear until they entered the open country. The Marquis of Pionessa, finding that all his attempts were frustrated, and that every artifice he used was only an alarm signal to the inhabitants of Roris, determined to act openly, and therefore proclaimed that ample rewards should be given to anyone who would bear arms against the obstinate heretics of Roris, as he called them, and that any officer who would exterminate them should be rewarded in a princely manner. This engaged Captain Mario, a bigoted Roman Catholic and a desperate ruffian, to undertake the enterprise. He therefore obtained leave to raise a regiment in the following six towns: Lucerne, Bourges, Fomelin, Bobbio, Baignal, and Cavos. Having completed his regiment, which consisted of 1,000 men, he laid his plan not only to go by the defiles or the passes, but to attempt gaining the summit of a rock, whence he imagined he could pour his troops into the town without much difficulty or opposition. The Protestants suffered the Roman Catholic troops to gain almost the summit of the rock, without giving them any opposition or ever appearing in their sight. But when they had almost reached the top, they made a most furious attack upon them, one party keeping up a well-directed and constant fire, and another party rolling down huge stones. This stopped the career of the Papist troops. Many were killed by the musketry, and more by the stones which beat them down the precipices. Several fell sacrifices to their hurry, for by attempting a precipitate retreat they fell down and were dashed to pieces, and Captain Mario himself narrowly escaped with his life, for he fell from a craggy place into a river which washed the foot of the rock. He was taken up senseless, but afterward recovered, though he was ill of the bruises for a long time, and at length he fell into a decline at Lucerne, where he died. Another body of troops was ordered from the camp at Villario to make an attempt upon Roris, but these were likewise defeated by means of the Protestants' ambush fighting, and compelled to retreat again to the camp at Villario. After each of these signal victories, Captain Jeanneville made a suitable discourse to his men, causing them to kneel down and return thanks to the Almighty for his providential protection, and usually concluded with the 11th Psalm, where the subject is placing confidence in God. The Marquis of Pennessa was greatly enraged at being so much baffled by the few inhabitants of Roris. He, therefore, determined to attempt their expulsion in such a manner as could hardly fail of success. With this view, he ordered all the Roman Catholic militia of Piedmont to be raised and disciplined. When these orders were completed, he joined to the militia 8,000 regular troops, and dividing the whole into three distinct bodies, he designed that three formidable attacks should be made at the same time, unless the people of Roris, to whom he sent an account of his great preparations, would comply with the following conditions. 1. To ask pardon for taking up arms. 2. To pay the expenses of all the expeditions sent against them. 3. To acknowledge the infallibility of the Pope. 4. To go to Mass. 5. To pray to the saints. 6. To wear beards. 7. To deliver up their ministers. 8. To deliver up their schoolmasters. 9. To go to confession. 10. To pay loans for the delivery of souls from purgatory. 11. To give up Captain Jeanneville at discretion. 12. To give up the elders of their church at discretion. The inhabitants of Roris, on being acquainted with these conditions, were filled with an honest indignation and, in answer, sent word to the Marquis that sooner than comply with them they would suffer three things which, of all others, were the most obnoxious to mankind, viz. 1. Their estates to be seized. 2. Their houses to be burned. 3. Themselves to be murdered. Exasperated at this message, the Marquis sent them this laconic epistle. To the obstinate heretics inhabiting Roris, you shall have your request, for the troops sent against you have strict injunctions to plunder, burn, and kill. Pianessa. The three armies were then put in motion, and the attacks ordered to be made thus. The first by the rocks of Villario, the second by the pass of Bagnol, and the third by the defile of Lucerne. The troops forced their way by the superiority of numbers, and having gained the rocks, pass, and defile, began to make the most horrid depredations, and exercise the greatest cruelties. Men they hanged, burned, racked to death, or cut to pieces. Women they ripped open, crucified, drowned, or threw from the precipices. And children they tossed upon spears, minced, cut their throats, or dashed out their brains. 126 suffered in this manner on the first day of their gaining the town. Agreeable to the Marquis of Pianessa's orders, they likewise plundered the estates and burned the houses of the people. Several Protestants, however, made their escape under the conduct of Captain Jeanneville, whose wife and children were unfortunately made prisoners, and sent under a strong guard to Turin. The Marquis of Pianessa wrote a letter to Captain Jeanneville, and released a Protestant prisoner that he might carry it to him. The contents were that if the captain would embrace the Roman Catholic religion, he should be indemnified for all his losses since the commencement of the war, his wife and children should be immediately released, and himself honorably promoted in the Duke of Savoy's army. But if he refused to accede to the proposals made him, his wife and children should be put to death, and so large a reward should be given to take him, dead or alive, that even some of his own confidential friends should be tempted to betray him from the greatness of the sum. To this epistle, the brave Jeanneville sent the following answer. My Lord Marquis, there is no torment so great or death so cruel, but what I would prefer the abjuration of my religion, so that promises lose their effects, and menaces only strengthen me in my faith. With respect to my wife and children, my lord, nothing can be more afflicting to me than the thought of their confinement, or more dreadful to my imagination than their suffering a violent and cruel death. I keenly feel all the tender sensations of husband and parent. My heart is replete with every sentiment of humanity. I would suffer any torment to rescue them from danger. I would die to preserve them. But having said this much, my lord, I assure you that the purchase of their lives must not be the price of my salvation. You have them in your power, it is true, but my consolation is that your power is only a temporary authority over their bodies. You may destroy the mortal part, but their immortal souls are out of your reach and will live hereafter to bear testimony against you for your cruelties. I therefore recommend them and myself to God and pray for a reformation in your heart. Joshua Jonneville. This brave Protestant officer, after writing the above letter, retired to the Alps with his followers, and being joined by a great number of other fugitive Protestants, he harassed the enemy by continual skirmishes. Meeting one day with a body of Papist troops near Bibiana, he, though inferior in numbers, attacked them with great fury and put them to the rout without the loss of a man, though himself was shot through the leg in the engagement by a soldier who had hid himself behind a tree. But Jonneville, perceiving whence the shot came, pointed his gun to the place and dispatched the person who had wounded him. Captain Jonneville, hearing that a Captain Jahir had collected together a considerable body of Protestants, wrote him a letter proposing a junction of their forces. Captain Jahir immediately agreed to the proposal and marched directly to meet Jonneville. The junction being formed, it was proposed to attack a town inhabited by Roman Catholics called Garcigliana. The assault was given with great spirit, but a reinforcement of horse and foot having lately entered the town, which the Protestants knew nothing of, they were repulsed, yet made a masterly retreat and only lost one man in the action. The next attempt of the Protestant forces was upon St. Secondo, which they attacked with great vigor, but met with a strong resistance from the Roman Catholic troops, who had fortified the streets and planted themselves in the houses, from whence they poured musket balls in prodigious numbers. The Protestants, however, advanced under cover of a great number of planks, which some held over their heads, to secure them from the shots of the enemy from the houses, while others kept up a well-directed fire, so that the houses and entrenchments were soon forced and the town taken. In the town they found a prodigious quantity of plunder, which had been taken from Protestants at various times and different places, and which were stored up in the warehouses, churches, dwelling-houses, etc. This they removed to a place of safety, to be distributed with as much justice as possible among the sufferers. This successful attack was made with such skill and spirit that it cost very little to the conquering party, the Protestants having only 17 killed and 26 wounded, while the Papists suffered a loss of no less than 450 killed and 511 wounded. Five Protestant officers, viz. Jonneville, Jahir, Laurentio, Genelet, and Benet, laid a plan to surprise Becerra. To this end they marched in five respective bodies and by agreement were to make the attack at the same time. The captains, Jahir and Laurentio, passed through two defiles in the woods and came to the place in safety under cover, but the other three bodies made their approaches through an open country and, consequently, were more exposed to an attack. The Roman Catholics taking the alarm, a great number of troops were sent to relieve Becerra from Cavour, Bibiana, Feline, Campiglione, and some other neighboring places. When these were united, they determined to attack the three Protestant parties that were marching through the open country. The Protestant officers, perceiving the intent of the enemy, and not being at a great distance from each other, joined forces with the utmost expedition and formed themselves in order of battle. In the meantime, the captains, Jahir and Laurentio, had assaulted the town of Becerra and burnt all the outhouses to make their approaches with the greater ease, but not being supported, as they expected, by the other three Protestant captains, they sent a messenger on a swift horse toward the open country to inquire the reason. The messenger soon returned and informed them that it was not in the power of the three Protestant captains to support the proceedings, as they were themselves attacked by a very superior force in the plain and could scarce sustain the unequal conflict. The captains, Jahir and Laurentio, on receiving this intelligence, determined to discontinue the assault on Becerra, and to proceed with all possible expedition to the relief of their friends on the plain. This design proved to be of the most essential service, for just as they arrived at the spot where the two armies were engaged, the Papist troops began to prevail, and were on the point of flanking the left wing commanded by Captain Jonneville. The arrival of these troops turned the scale in favor of the Protestants, and the Papist forces, though they fought with the most obstinate intrepidity, were totally defeated. A great number were killed and wounded on both sides, and the baggage, military stores, etc., taken by the Protestants were very considerable. Captain Jonneville, having information that 300 of the enemy were to convoy a great quantity of stores, provisions, etc., from La Tour to the castle of Mirbach, determined to attack them on the way. He accordingly began the assault at Malbec, though with a very inadequate force. The contest was long and bloody, but the Protestants at length were obliged to yield to the superiority of numbers and compelled to make a retreat, which they did with great regularity and but little loss. Captain Jeanneville advanced to an advantageous post, situated near the town of Villario, and then sent the following information and commands to the inhabitants. Number 1, that he should attack the town in 24 hours. Number 2, that with respect to the Roman Catholics who had borne arms, whether they belonged to the army or not, he should act by the law of retaliation and put them to death, for they had numerous depredations and many cruel murders they had committed. Number 3, that all women and children, whatever their religion might be, should be safe. Number 4, that he commanded all male Protestants to leave the town and join him. Number 5, that all apostates who had, through weakness, abjured their religion, should be deemed enemies unless they renounced their abjuration. Number 6, that all who returned to their duty to God and themselves should be received as friends. The Protestants in general immediately left the town and joined Captain Jeanneville with great satisfaction, and the few who, through weakness or fear, had abjured their faith, recanted their abjuration and were received into the bosom of the Church. As the Marquis of Canessa had removed the army and encamped in quite a different part of the country, the Roman Catholics of Villario thought it would be folly to attempt to defend the place with the small force they had. They therefore fled with the utmost precipitation, leaving the town and most of their property to the discretion of the Protestants. The Protestant commanders, having called a council of war, resolved to make an attempt upon the town of La Tour. The Papists, being apprised of the design, detached some troops to defend a defile, through which the Protestants must make their approach. But these were defeated, compelled to abandon the pass, and forced to retreat to La Tour. Protestants proceeded on their march, and the troops of La Tour, on their approach, made a furious sally, but were repulsed with great loss and compelled to seek shelter in the town. The governor now only thought of defending the place, which the Protestants began to attack in form. But after many brave attempts and furious assaults, the commanders determined to abandon the enterprise for several reasons, particularly because they found the place itself too strong, their own number too weak, and their cannon not adequate to the task of battering down the walls. This resolution taken, the Protestant commanders began a masterly retreat, and conducted it with such regularity that the enemy did not choose to pursue them, or molest their rear, which they might have done as they passed the defiles. The next day they mustered, reviewed the army, and found the whole to amount to 495 men. They then held a council of war and planned an easier enterprise. This was to make an attack on the commonalty of Crusol, a place inhabited by a number of the most bigoted Roman Catholics, and who had exercised during the persecutions the most unheard of cruelties on the Protestants. The people of Crusol, hearing of the design against them, fled to a neighboring fortress situated on a rock where the Protestants could not come to them, for a very few men could render it inaccessible to a numerous army. Thus they secured their persons, but were in too much hurry to secure their property, the principal part of which, indeed, had been plundered from the Protestants, and now luckily fell again to the possession of the right owners. It consisted of many rich and valuable articles, and, what at that time was of much more consequence, viz., a great quantity of military stores. The day after the Protestants were gone with their booty, 800 troops arrived to the assistance of the people of Crusol, having been dispatched from Lucerne, Biquera, Tavor, etc. But finding themselves too late, and that pursuit would be vain, not to return empty-handed, they began to plunder the neighboring villages, though what they took was from their friends. After collecting a tolerable booty, they began to divide it, but disagreeing about the different shares, they fell from words to blows, did a great deal of mischief, and then plundered each other. On the very same day in which the Protestants were so successful at Crusol, some Papists marched with a design to plunder and burn the little Protestant village of Rocapiata. But by the way, they were met with the Protestant forces belonging to the captains, Jahir and Laurentio, who were posted on the hill of Anronia. A trivial engagement ensued, for the Roman Catholics, on the very first attack, retreated in great confusion and were pursued with much slaughter. After the pursuit was over, some struggling Papist troops, meeting with a poor peasant, who was a Protestant, tied a cord round his head and strained it until his skull was quite crushed. Captain Jeanneville and Captain Jahir concerted a design together to make an attack upon Lucerne. But Captain Jahir, not bringing up his forces at the time appointed, Captain Jeanneville determined to attempt the enterprise himself. He therefore, by a forced march, proceeded towards that place during the whole and was close to it by break of day. His first care was to cut the pipes that conveyed water into the town, and then to break down the bridge by which alone provisions from the country could enter. He then assaulted the place and speedily possessed himself of 2 of the outposts. But finding he could not make himself master of the place, he prudently retreated with very little loss, blaming, however, Captain Jahir for the failure of the enterprise. The Papists, being informed that Captain Jeanneville was at Anronia with only his own company, determined, if possible, to surprise him. With this view, a great number of troops were detached from Latour and other places. One party of these got on top of a mountain beneath which he was posted, and the other party intended to possess themselves of the gate of St. Bartholomew. The papists thought themselves sure of taking Captain Jonneval and every one of his men, as they consisted but of 300, and their own force was 2,500. Their design, however, was providentially frustrated, for one of the popish soldiers, imprudently blowing a trumpet before the signal for attack was given, Captain Jonneval took the alarm and posted his little company so advantageously at the gate of St. Bartholomew and at the defile by which the enemy must descend from the mountains, that the Roman Catholic troops failed in both attacks, and were repulsed with very considerable loss. End of chapter 6, part 6.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail-order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's E-D-M-O-N-T-O-N, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."